Chapter 28. 21 June 1937. Hannah walked slowly up the garden to her favourite spot, settled herself on the wooden bench surrounded by high bushes, and took out the letter Hugo's solicitor had given her. In the strong sunlight, his writing stood out boldly from the paper. "I want you to know you have been the most important person in my life. From the moment I first saw you, I was a little in love, and my feelings grew stronger over the years. Knowing and loving you has brought my greatest happiness." She read and reread his words umpteen times. They were her greatest source of comfort now. She felt cosseted by them. It was a measure of Hugo's love, but he thought of what she'd be feeling at this time. Hannah lifted her face to the sun. Its warmth comforted her too. She was spending a lot of time in this corner of the garden now. Here she was closer to the next-door house than she was to her own, and could not be seen from either. She liked the seclusion and the leafy greenery. It smelled fresh and earthy. She continued to read the letter, though she knew it almost by heart now. "For years I tried to put you out of my mind, but I failed. I wronged Matt. I ask that you try, if you can, to make up for my wrongs. I couldn't reach him once he grew up, and I know you find it difficult, but please try. He has had far less satisfaction in his life than I've had in mine." She was trying. She'd wronged Matt too, but she'd persuaded him to stay here now, and she'd try and keep him longer. Perhaps she could get closer to him. She read again from Hugo's letter. "I don't want you to grieve for me. I want you to be happy." She wanted to tell him, "I can't feel happy without you. Not yet." Nothing could stop her missing Hugo. Nothing could stop the tears pricking at her eyes. She longed to see him come striding round the bushes to join her, as he sometimes used to. To grieve was normal, and his words eased her. "The best advice would be to tell you to forget me now, put what has happened behind you, but I can't. I want you to remember me and the joy we had, and to feel no regret." She folded his letter back into the envelope. She had no regrets, quite the reverse. She would always remember him for his kindness, and she had the twins. He'd suggested she formally adopt them, and it was all going through smoothly. They gave her something to cling to, and he'd given her so much love. She heard heavy steps coming up the garden. A moment ago she'd been longing to hear this. She felt her heart quicken as somebody brushed against the bushes, but it was Matt who came in view and then slumped beside her on the bench. His face was creased with worry.
"Nancy said you were up here, hiding yourself away."
He sounded agitated. "Has something happened?" Her breathing hadn't quite returned to normal.
"Things are worse than I thought, much worse."
"At the factory?"
"There's been wholesale theft. We've not been paid for half the toffee we've made this year. I've called the police."
"Matt," she felt for his hand. "It's hard, especially now, so soon after your father's."
"It's desperate, and would be at any time. We've lost a tremendous amount of stock. The whole business is so pointless if it doesn't make a profit. All the work, almost no checks have come through the books in a month. And while Greg has been helping himself to company funds, somebody else has too."
"Who?"
Matt sighed. "That's for the police to find out."
His anger flared up again.
"To think Greg wouldn't even listen when Nick Bender tried to show him what was happening. If he'd checked through the books then and done something about it, we'd have stopped it by now."
"It's still going on?"
"As far as I can see. What makes it even worse is it must be one of the staff."
Joey felt balanced on a knife edge. The days had never seemed so long drawn out. Rumours were flying round the office, but the routine work ground on as usual. There was talk of losses, and it was being said quite openly that Evans's would not make a profit this year. It gave him a real kick to think he'd done that to Greg Mortimer. He'd seen it as a personal success, and crowed about it to Lizzie. She'd been short with him. "I've already told you, Greg's been taking money from the accounts for his own use.
That's why Matt's very concerned about the business. Why, he's checking everything. He's thinking of selling.
Joey had been reassured the first time. He was reassured again. It was good news if Greg was being blamed, but he couldn't help being worried about what else they would discover.
When he saw the factory manager going into Matt Mortimer's office with an armful of ledgers and staying for a considerable time, Joey felt himself come out in a cold sweat. Was Greg getting the blame for every lot they turned up, or were they on to what he was doing? He had no way of knowing. On Tuesday afternoon, he heard an emergency stock-taking had started, and that scared him stiff. He thought it would take at least 3 days to complete, and told himself he'd still be all right. He'd be away on holiday before they were finished, only to hear that extra men had been drafted in to speed the job up. He knew it wouldn't be long before they had the complete picture. It would be touch and go whether he'd get away in time. Today was Thursday, only one more working day to get through. He kept telling himself he'd be all right, they wouldn't have enough time to pin it on him. But he didn't know what they knew already. He couldn't work, he was no longer doing anything but move paper round his desk, and it was agonizing to have to stay there. He'd told Lizzie, "We're going to get married next Saturday, the 24th of June, at 10 o'clock, in the register office in Birkenhead." "Just like that? Can't drag our feet, not now there's a baby coming." He'd given her a wad of pound notes. "Get yourself something nice to wear. Some things for the honeymoon, too. Lizzie, it's time we both enjoyed ourselves." "Yes, married on Saturday morning, then go straight to Blackpool." If he'd planned it this way from the beginning, he couldn't have worked it out better. He couldn't make up his mind whether or not to tell people in the office he was getting married. If he was on honeymoon, it would be unthinkable for him to come back to take the wages. But he was not the sort to jaw about what he did. He trained himself to keep his lip buttoned. It was safer that way. Nobody must know Lizzie was a Mortimer. That would put the spotlight on him. He only broadcast things he wanted to be generally known, like his being in Blackpool when the theft took place. He decided to say nothing about his wedding. He didn't want people rubbernecking at them. On Monday, he'd been a couple of hours late coming to work and told Mr. Gleason he'd overslept. He'd been up an hour earlier than usual and had taken Lizzie out to Neston to look at houses. He'd already picked out those he wanted to see and made the arrangements.
"Why Neston?" Lizzie asked. "I've never even been there."
He'd looked in Gleason's files to pick a district in which none of the managers lived. It was too far from Evans's for the others to travel in on the bus every day. He'd never set foot in the town, so nobody would know him there. "It's a nice place, a little market town, away from the docks and the endless streets."
"Too far," Lizzie had protested.
"Healthier and better for bringing up a family." He'd whisked her round three houses and persuaded her that the largest would suit them best. All the houses in the road had large gardens and were set well apart. He didn't want a place where the neighbours were always dropping in. He went back to the agent, rented it in Lizzie's name, paid a month's rent, and got the key. This time nobody would find him. It was a nice house, too, and away from the main roads. "I'll have to take another day off work to move the furniture."
"We can hire a van," Lizzie said. "That would be the easiest. Now you've got plenty of money, no point in killing ourselves."
"I'll move us," Joey said quietly.
He had to. That way nobody could check through removal firms and find their new address.
"I'll get Bill to bring the van and give a hand."
It would be hard work, and he was exhausted now.
"Wednesday," he said. "I'll tell them at work I'm not well."
He usually restocked Bill's van on Wednesday nights, so there wouldn't be too much left inside by then.
"At least you're here, Lizzie, to get the curtains up and the place straight."
Yesterday, humping all the furniture he'd accumulated to the new house had been exhausting. It had taken several journeys, and all the trouble of emptying the toffee out of the van first and putting it back afterwards. They hadn't finished until 6 o'clock, and Lizzie's face had been white with fatigue by then. Joey had run Bill home, fully intending to follow his usual routine, go back and stock the van again that night. Lizzie had a scratch supper of eggs and bacon ready when he got back, and he'd nodded off in a chair, hadn't been able to stay awake any longer. He hadn't given a thought to Evans's all day, but now when he did, he was getting cold feet. Stocktaking must have told the Mortimers that huge amounts were disappearing. It would be common sense for them to keep a closer watch on what was left, and he'd no idea what had happened today, because he hadn't been there. To think of going in made him feel ill. He was too tired anyway. He'd decided to go to bed early instead. He'd tell Bill the game was over, tell him to paint the toffee adverts off the van and sell it. It was too much like hard work anyway. It hadn't been easy to face Gleason again this morning. He'd been none too polite.
"Sick again? Have you brought a doctor's note?"
"No, sir. Couldn't leave the lavatory. Went between that and me bed all day. Couldn't get to the doctor, I was so bad." "You're taking too much time off, O'Malley. You'll have to bring a note next time. If you go on like this, you'll get your cards. You're either late or you don't turn up at all. It won't do." Joey slumped onto his chair. The prospect of getting his cards seemed attractive. But a glance in the ledgers told him there'd been 6 big checks in the mail yesterday that he'd missed. What if somebody noticed there were checks when he wasn't here, but not when he was? Joey felt his neck jerk involuntarily. It hurt, and he felt fuzzy. A glance at the clock told him he'd dozed off at his desk. At least it had passed another 20 minutes. He rubbed his neck and along his jaw when Nick had belted him once. It still ached a bit, though the bruise was fading. He was catnapping like an old man. He still felt heavy with sleep, but edgy too. He wondered if it would be safe to come back tonight and take a couple more checks from the safe. He was worried about doing it now, because Matthew Mortimer seemed to be taking a big interest in the accounts. But if he'd chickened out of this too, he'd get less cash this week than he'd anticipated. Having Lizzie in his bed meant less sleep too. He was overdoing things, had too many irons in the fire at the moment, but it wouldn't be for very much longer. He couldn't wait to get to Blackpool. All the difficulties bar one would be over by then, and he'd be sleeping like a baby. Joey kept his head down over his ledgers and tried to cut out the sounds of the office around him. The whispered conversations, the distant clack of typewriters, the trill of the phone. He hated having to sit here day after day, but it was going to be worth it. Only today and tomorrow. Surely nothing terrible could happen in that time. Lizzie thought regretfully of the romantic notion she'd picked up about weddings at the Lyceum. As she watched Joey frown with concentration as he fastened his tie, she knew her wedding would have few of the trappings of romance.
"Are you ready, Joey? We don't want to be late."
"We won't be." His voice was impatient. "Have you packed everything? My new swimming trunks? We'll be going straight off on honeymoon."
"I do hope it'll be all right," she worried. "We're both underage. We're supposed to have permission from our parents to do this."
"It'll be all right. I've fixed it."
"I still think I should have asked Hannah. She's the nearest real relative."
"No." Joey bent to kiss her cheek. "I don't want you to go near any of the Mortimers again. Besides, we didn't have time to organize all that. I've seen to it. It'll be all right."
"But I don't see how."
Lizzie was fitting the tiny hat of red feathers on her blonde curls. It had an eye veil of red net. She'd already dressed in the red costume of fine wool worsted and the cream lace blouse she'd chosen as her wedding outfit. "You will. Come on, we'd better go." Lizzie sat beside him in the Austin 7 and reflected that despite his promise, Joey hadn't changed for the better. She'd always resented the high-handed way he settled her affairs without even asking her. "I do love you, Lizzie," he said. His mismatched eyes twinkled at her, and for once he seemed more the Joey she knew. Lizzie blinked hard. It didn't rid her of her misgivings. Joey was changing, and not for the better. He'd been such a ball of tension since she'd come back, irritable and on edge.
"We'll need witnesses, Joey."
"Yes, 2. Eli Jones is coming. He's the night watchman at Evans's, and a friend of mine. He's going to say his name is Seamus O'Malley and sign the form for me. Bill Purley is bringing his dad. He's going to pretend his name is James Mortimer and sign for you." Lizzie stiffened with displeasure.
"Joey, we can't do that."
"Course we can. Who's to know? I would have said we were both 21, except it shows we aren't on our birth certificates. Good job you got your real one from Hannah.
It won't be legal.
Course it will, and who's to know? Can't see my dad questioning it, even if he found out.
Lizzie groaned. She'd wanted everything to be perfect today. Now she was going to be worried stiff about the questions the registrar would ask. Joey, what's the matter with you? You can't be straight about anything any more.
She thought of Nick's honest face and longed for him. She'd always known where she stood with him. She was having qualms about Joey. He no longer seemed to be normal. Why go to such lengths? He could have written to his father. Everything seemed unreal.
In plenty of time, Joey said as he parked outside the town hall, 9:45.
Bill Purley was there with his father. She hardly knew what to say to them. The whole business was outrageous and unnecessary. Lizzie was smouldering with indignation.
"You haven't forgotten?" Joey asked Bill's father. "Your name's James Mortimer, okay?"
Lizzie swallowed hard. This was a horrible thing to do to her.
"Here's Eli," Joey said, as a grey-haired man came round the corner. The next moment she was being ushered inside. She couldn't think of anything but the trouble Joey managed to get them into. The small room seemed richly furnished, with flowers on the polished desk. Lizzie was terrified when she saw the details on the form she was required to sign. Her father's name, a fictitious James Mortimer. His address was fictitious, too. Joey had given his occupation as schoolmaster. Lizzie hesitated. What would happen if she refused to have anything to do with this? Joey was chatting with the registrar as though he hadn't a care in the world. With a shudder, she picked up the pen and signed. The ceremony was very simple and over almost too quickly. Then she was signing the register and trying to hold back her tears. She was Lizzie O'Malley again, and now she had a perfect right to the name. The new wedding band glistened on her finger. 22-carat this time, the real thing, not just a ring for pretense from Woolworths. On the way out of the building, she saw the next bride with a horde of guests in the waiting room. Out on the pavement and walking back to the car, it all seemed unreal. All three men kissed her cheek.
"Pity the pubs aren't open yet," Bill said. "We could have had a drink on it."
Lizzie shuddered and slammed the car door shut.
"Straight to Blackpool now," Joey rubbed his hands with satisfaction. "It's all fitting in very well. I'm beginning to get the holiday feeling."
"We needn't have been in such a hurry," Lizzie mourned. "We could have taken more time, done it properly."
"It's done," he said impatiently. "What difference does it make now?"
Lizzie told herself it was too late to have regrets. She'd had to do it for the coming baby. It was stupid to have second thoughts about Joey as a husband, though he'd been very strange since she'd come back. His behaviour had been so odd. He'd seemed to have urgent business to attend to all the time. He'd hardly been home. She tried to throw off the feeling of gloom as Joey drove north. It was the first time she'd driven through the tunnel to Liverpool. It was the first time she'd ever done a long trip by car, and she was enthralled. They drove out on the Preston Road, and the sun came out. Joey stopped for lunch at a big hotel.
"It's our wedding breakfast. You have whatever you want."
They ordered smoked salmon, followed by roast chicken, and suddenly everything looked brighter. Blackpool seemed a long way, a different world. Lizzie was growing tired, but the sight and scents of the sea and the busy promenade were a heady mixture. Joey pushed a map into her hand and asked her to guide him to the boarding house. She managed it as they went round a second time. It was only a few minutes from the promenade.
"This is Brunton Street," she said
as they turned between long terraces of houses. "And there's the Bellevue." It was a tall, narrow house with bay windows.
"Stop, Joey. You've passed it."
"I want to park the car," he grunted.
"There's plenty of space right outside."
"Don't want to be too close."
"We aren't any longer."
Lizzie felt the first stirrings of alarm.
"We'll have to walk back with our cases. I would have thought the nearer the door the better."
Joey said nothing. They were in another side street.
It seemed little different to Brunton Street. He pulled into the curb and stopped.
Lizzie sat still in her seat.
"What are you doing this for, Joey?"
"It's safer here."
"It would have been perfectly safe right outside."
"All the same."
"You don't want anybody to see it, do you? People who stay at boarding houses like that don't usually have cars."
He didn't answer. Lizzie hauled her suitcase off the back seat and started to walk back.
"Nobody knows us here. What difference does it make if they do know you have a car? I don't understand why you go to all this trouble for nothing."
But she did. She had a sinking feeling in her stomach.
"You've got something else planned, haven't you?"
Angrily, she dropped her case on the pavement and stopped.
"For God's sake, Joey, what's the matter with you?"
"Come on, Lizzie," he said, picking up her case and carrying that too. "It's too dangerous. Haven't I told you they know about the checks?"
"They don't know it's me."
"They will if they catch you at it. Anyway, there's no need. I'll have more money than I know what to do with."
"I said I'm going to fix Greg Mortimer."
"He's fixed himself," she wailed. "There's no need for you to do another thing."
"I want to,"
he said as they reached the door of the Bellevue boarding house.
"I personally want to fix Greg Mortimer."
"Miss Peacock?"
He was unusually effusive to the owner.
"You aren't at all like your sister."
Lizzie followed him upstairs, her head in a whirl.
"A pleasant room," Joey said.
Lizzie thought it nothing out of the ordinary. She had hung curtains in a much smarter bedroom back home in Neston. She went to the window. It was at the rear of the house and overlooked the backyard.
"Don't do anything else," Lizzie said as soon as they were alone. "Don't dare do anything else."
"Just one last thing," he insisted. "I'm going back on Thursday night to do one last thing. Nobody will be expecting it. I'm going to help myself to the wages, the whole payroll. It'll be perfectly safe."
"No, Joey, whatever for. Soon we'll have all the money we can spend."
"That makes it even safer. Don't you see? I'm going to have an unbreakable alibi. I'm in Blackpool on my honeymoon. It'll have the Mortimers running round like headless chickens. A real stab in the back."
"The risk," Lizzie groaned in horror and threw herself down on the bed. "I won't let you do it."
She turned her face into the pillow. The hardest thing Joey felt was to appear relaxed and in a holiday mood when inside he felt wound as tight as a watch spring. He didn't want to go through another week like the last one. It had nearly finished him. He'd worked flat out moving house, still taking every check he could, still drawing money from Evans's accounts, and checking 100 times over that he'd forgotten nothing. Having Lizzie with him wound him tighter. She'd done nothing but nag since he'd told her about his plans for taking the wages. He'd never known her so determined to stop him doing anything.
"I feel it in my bones," she said vehemently. "You'll get caught."
She wasn't even much fun. She was touchy about everything. Of course he wanted Lizzie very much. He loved her. But it would have suited him to be alone for these few days, as he'd planned in the first place. He needed a rest. The last few months had taken a lot out of him. It was no use denying that. Regularly, for 2 nights a week, he'd spent only 2 or 3 hours in bed. He'd worked as usual all the following day. Blackpool was a wonderful place, and at any other time he'd have thoroughly enjoyed himself. What he wanted to do now was lie on his bed and rest, get himself in good nick to do this one last job. Instead, he had to get up for breakfast. Kippers or eggs and bacon were served between 8 o'clock and 9, and after that they were expected to go out. He made Lizzie do what all the holidaymakers were doing. They went to the beach and walked for miles along it. They climbed to the top of the tower. They stayed out late at night, dancing or watching a show. They walked arm in arm along the prom, looking at the stores with kiss-me-quick hats. He bought them ice cream and lovely salty mussels and winkles. The weather was breezy, but dry and sunny most of the time. He couldn't have asked for more, except from Lizzie. She couldn't see why he wanted his own money, but she hadn't got hers yet, and it seemed such a waste not to get the payroll when he'd gone to so much trouble to set the job up. The night when he must do it was drawing closer.
On Tuesday he suggested they go fishing on one of the many boats plying for customers. It was a sunny morning, but more blustery. He hadn't realized there would be a big swell once they were out of the harbor. Lizzie saw the distant skyline come and go as the boat wallowed. She shuffled up the hard seat, trying to get more comfortable. Something was giving her backache. She realized now they hadn't chosen the right boat for this trip. She reckoned this one spent the winter trawling with nets, and the summer taking holidaymakers out to fish with lines. It was thimble-sized, ancient and dirty, and in the swell it was going up and down like a lift. Joey was hanging over the rail, engrossed in the silvery spin beneath the dark waves. He was catching mackerel by the dozen and thoroughly enjoying himself. "We'll take some back to the Bellevue and see if they'll cook them for our supper." His strange eyes danced with pleasure. Lizzie found the smell of fish overpowering, even in the brisk wind, which was plastering her hair against her face. The sun was shining straight into her eyes and glistening on the water, dazzlingly bright. She could feel a headache coming on. They could have taken a shorter 3-hour trip, but had elected to stay out for 6 hours. Lizzie looked at Blackpool, a thin line in the distance, and wished they had not. The hours stretched ahead before they'd be back in the harbour. "Come on, Lizzie, cheer up," Joey said. His mousy hair was standing up in the wind. "Come and have a go. We've hit a shoal. It's easy." All round her other holidaymakers were pulling in their lines with squeals of triumph as they found mackerel glittering and squirming on the end. Lizzie felt she couldn't sit still any longer. She went to the rail and threw the hand line and hook she'd been given over the side. "I don't feel very well," she said. Joey was sympathetic and got a drink of water for her from the wheelhouse. It didn't help much. Lizzie felt worse looking down at the water, and although she too was catching fish, it didn't take her mind off her backache, which was getting worse. The morning dragged on. Lizzie returned to her hard seat. Other people were noticing and came to tell her she didn't look well. Another woman said she felt seasick and came to sit quietly beside her. Remedies were discussed, barley sugar sweets offered. Lizzie didn't think her problem was seasickness. She was having pains which came and went, and she had a terrible dragging feeling, like she sometimes had before a period, but this was worse. When she went to the single smelly lavatory, she found she was losing blood. Joey was waiting for her outside, but she went straight to the rail and vomited over the side. "You're seasick," he said, getting another drink of water for her. "You're not the only one. There's a boy back there." A deckhand came round with a message. The wind was stiffening, and the master had decided to return to shore earlier than had been arranged. Lizzie groaned with relief. Joey came and buttoned his coat round her, because she felt cold. "You'll feel better once we get on dry land," he said.
"No, I think I must be losing the baby," she whispered.
Joey went pale. He held her close. "How do we stop it?" Lizzie had no idea.
"Are you sorry?" he whispered.
Lizzie couldn't think for the pains. What she really felt was frightened.
"Sorry it's happening now."
2 weeks ago she might have been pleased, but now she'd changed so many things for the sake of the baby, she thought she felt sorry. When the time came to get off the boat, she could hardly walk. The pains when they came doubled her up. She wasn't even able to stagger.
"I'd better take you straight to hospital, hadn't I?"
Joey's face was paper white now. He left her sitting on a seat while he went to ask where the hospital was. She sat there alone for what seemed ages, afraid she might be sick again, willing Joey to come back to her quickly. The next thing she knew, he was helping her to her feet, and there was a taxi waiting at the curb.